Blind Sight, Disc 8.
There was no way to learn what they'd whispered across that wall. We could recover the audio easily enough, parse every tick and tap they'd exchanged, but you can't decipher a code without some idea of content. We had patterns of sound that could have meant anything. We had creatures whose grammar and syntax, if their mode of communication even contained such attributes, were unknown, and perhaps unknowable. We had creatures smart enough to talk, and smart enough to hide that fact. No matter how much we wanted to learn, they were obviously unwilling to teach us. Not without, how had I put it? Negative reinforcement. It was Yuka Saraste who made the decision. We did it on his orders as we did everything else. But after the word had come down, after Saraste had disappeared in the night and Bates had retreated down the spine and Robert Cunningham had returned to his studies at the back of the drum, I was the one Susan James was left with. The first to speak the vile thought aloud, the official witness to posterity. I was the one she looked at and looked away from, her surfaces hard and refractory. And then she started. This is how you break down the wall. Start with two beings. They can be human if you like, but that's hardly a prerequisite. All that matters is that they know how to talk among themselves. Separate them. Let them see each other. Let them speak. Perhaps a window between their cages. Perhaps an audio feed. Let them practice the art of conversation in their own chosen way. Hurt them. It may take a while to figure out how. Some may shrink from fire, others from toxic gas or liquid. Some creatures may be invulnerable to blowtorches and grenades, but shriek in terror at the threat of ultrasonic sound. You have to experiment. And when you discover just the right stimulus, the optimum balance between pain and injury, you must inflict it without the remorse. You leave them an escape hatch, of course. That's the very point of the exercise. Give one of your subjects the means to end the pain, but give the other the information required to use it. To one, you might present a single shape, while showing the other a whole selection. The pain will stop when the being with the menu chooses the item its partner has seen. So let the games begin. Watch your subject squirm. When they trip the off switch, you'll know at least some of the information they exchanged. And if you record everything that passed between them, you'll start to get some idea of how they exchanged it. When they solve one puzzle, give them a new one. Mix things up. Switch their roles. See how they do at circles versus squares. Try them out on factorials and Fibonacci's. Continue until Rosetta Stone results. This is how you communicate with a fellow intelligence. You hurt it and keep on hurting it until you can distinguish the speech from the screams. Susan James, congenital optimist, high priestess of the Church of the Healing Word, was best qualified to design and execute the protocols. Now, at her command, the scramblers writhed. They pulled themselves around their cages in elliptical loops, desperately seeking any small corner free of stimulus. James had piped the feed into consensus, although there was no mission-critical reason for Theseus's whole crew to bear witness to the interrogation. "Let them block it at their ends," she said quietly, "if they want to." For all his reluctance to accept that these were beings, intelligent and aware, Cunningham had named the prisoners. Stretch tended to float spread-eagled. Clench was the balled-up corner hugger. Susan, playing her own part in this perverse role reversal, had simply numbered them 1 and 2. It wasn't that Cunningham's choices were too cheesy for her to stomach, or that she objected to slave names on principle. She'd just fallen back on the oldest trick in the torturer's handbook, the one that lets you go home to your family after work, play with your children, and sleep at night. Never humanize your victims. It shouldn't have been such an issue when dealing with methane-breathing Medusae. I guess every little bit helped. Biotelemetry danced across the headspace beside each alien, luminous annotations shuddering through thin air. I had no idea what constituted normal readings for these creatures, but I couldn't imagine those jagged spikes passing for anything but bad news. The creatures themselves seethed subtly with fine mosaics in blue and gray, fluid patterns rippling across their cuticles. Perhaps it was a reflexive reaction to the microwaves. For all we knew, it was a mating display. More likely, they were screaming. James killed the microwaves. In the left-hand enclosure, a yellow square dimmed. In the right, an identical icon nested among others never lit. The pigment flowed faster in the wake of the onslaught. The arms slowed but didn't stop. They swept back and forth like listless skeletal eels. Baseline exposure, 5 seconds, 250 watts. She spoke for the record. Another affectation. Theseus recorded every breath on board, every trickle of current to 5 decimal places. Repeat. The icon lit up. More tile patterns flash flooding across alien skin. But this time, neither alien moved from where it was. Their arms continued to squirm slightly, a torqued, trembling variation on the undulation they affected at rest. The telemetry was as harsh as ever, though. They've learned helplessness fast enough, I reflected. I glanced at Susan. Are you going to do this all yourself? Her eyes were bright and wet as she killed the current. Clench's icon dimmed. Stretches remained dormant. I cleared my throat. I mean, who else is going to do this, Siri? Yuka? You? The rest of the gang. Sasha? She stared at me. Siri, I created them. Do you think I did that so I could hide behind them when... so I could force them to do things like this? She shook her head. I'm not bringing them out. Not for this. I wouldn't do that to my worst enemy. She turned away from me. There were drugs she could have taken. Neuroinhibitors to wash away the guilt, short-circuit it right down in the molecules. Saraste had offered them up as if he were tempting some solitary messiah in the desert. James had refused him and would not say why. Repeat, she said. The current flickered on, then off. Repeat, she said again. Not a twitch. I pointed. I see it, she said. Clench had pressed the tip of one arm against the touchpad. The icon there glowed like a candle flame. 6.5 minutes later, they'd graduated from yellow squares to time-lapsed 4-dimensional polyhedrons. It took them as long to distinguish between 2 26-faceted shifting solids, differing by 1 facet in a single frame, as it took them to tell the difference between a yellow square and a red triangle. Intricate patterns played across their surfaces the whole time, dynamic needlepoint mosaics flickering almost too fast to see. Fuck, James whispered. Could be splinter skills. Cunningham had joined us in consensus, although his body remained halfway around Biomed. Splinter skills, she repeated dully. Savantism. Hyperperformance at one kind of calculation doesn't necessarily connote high intelligence. I know what splinter skills are, Robert. I just think you're wrong. Prove it. So she gave up on geometry and told the scramblers that 1 + 1 = 2. Evidently, they knew that already. 10 minutes later, they were predicting 10-digit prime numbers on demand. She showed them a sequence of 2-dimensional shapes. They picked the next one in the series from a menu of subtly different alternatives. She denied them multiple choice, showed them the beginning of a whole new sequence, and taught them to draw on the touch-sensitive interface with the tips of their arms. They finished that series in precise freehand, rendered a chain of logical descendants ending with a figure that led inexorably back to the starting point. These aren't drones, James's voice caught in her throat. This is all just crunching, Cunningham said. Millions of computer programs do it without ever waking up. They're intelligent, Robert. They're smarter than us. Maybe they're smarter than Yuka. And we're... Why can't you just admit it? I could see it all over her. Isaac would have admitted it. Because they don't have the circuitry, Cunningham insisted. How could... I don't know how, she cried. That's your job. All I know is that I'm torturing beings that can think rings around us. Not for much longer, at least. Once you figure out the language... She shook her head. Robert, I haven't a clue about the language. We've been at it for hours, haven't we? The gang's all here. Language databases 4,000 years thick, all the latest linguistic algorithms. And we know exactly what they're saying. We're watching every possible way they could be saying it, right down to the angstrom. Precisely. So I've got nothing. I know they're talking through pigment mosaics. There might even be something in the way they move those bristles, but I can't find the pattern. I can't even follow how they count, much less tell them I'm sorry. Nobody spoke for a while. Bates watched us from the galley on our ceiling, but made no attempt to join the proceedings. On Consensus, the reprieved scramblers floated in their cages like multi-armed martyrs. Well, Cunningham said at last, since this seems to be the day for bad news, here's mine. They're dying. James put her face in her hand. It's not your interrogation, for whatever that's worth, the biologist continued. As far as I can determine, some of their metabolic pathways are just missing. Obviously, you just haven't found them yet. That was Bates, speaking up from across the drum. No, Cunningham said slowly and distinctly. Obviously, those parts aren't available to the organism, because they're falling apart pretty much the way you'd expect one of us to if all the mitotic spindles in our cells just vanished out of the cytoplasm, for example. As far as I can tell, they started deteriorating the moment we took them off Rorschach. Susan looked up. Are you saying they left part of their biochemistry behind? Some essential nutrient? Bates suggested. They're not eating. Yes to the linguist, no to the major. Cunningham fell silent. I glanced across the drum to see him sucking on a cigarette. I think a lot of the cellular processes in these things are mediated externally. I think the reason I can't find any genes in my biopsies is because they don't have any. So what do they have instead? Bates asked. Turing morphogens. Blank looks, subtitling looks. Cunningham explained anyway. A lot of biology doesn't use genes. Sunflowers look the way they do because of purely physical buckling stress. You get Fibonacci sequences and golden ratios everywhere in nature, and there's no gene that codes for them. It's all just mechanical interactions. Take a developing embryo. The genes say start growing or stop growing, but the number of digits and vertebrae result from the mechanics of cells bumping against other cells. Those mitotic spindles I mentioned? Absolutely essential for replication in every eukaryotic cell, and they accrete like crystals without any genetic involvement. You'd be surprised how much your life is like that. But you still need genes, Bates protested, walking around to join us. Genes just establish the starting conditions to enable the process. The structure that proliferates afterwards doesn't need specific instructions. It's classic emergent complexity. We've known about it for over a century. Another drag on the stick, or even longer. Darwin cited honeycomb way back in the 1800s. Honeycomb, Bates repeated. Perfect hexagonal tubes in a packed array. Bees are hardwired to lay them down, but how does an insect know enough geometry to lay down a precise hexagon? It doesn't. It's programmed to chew up wax and spit it out while turning on its axis, and that generates a circle. Put a bunch of bees on the same surface, chewing side by side, and the circles abut against each other, deform each other into hexagons, which just happen to be more efficient for close packing anyway. Bates pounced. But the bees are programmed, genetically. You misunderstand. Scramblers are the honeycomb. Rorschach is the bees, James murmured. Cunningham nodded. Rorschach is the bees. And I don't think Rorschach's magnetic fields are counter-intrusion mechanisms at all. I think they're part of the life support system. I think they mediate and regulate a good chunk of scrambler metabolism. What we've got back in the hold is a couple of creatures dragged out of their element and holding their breath, and they can't hold it forever. How long? James asked. How should I know? If I'm right, I'm not even dealing with complete organisms here. Guess, Bates said. He shrugged. A few days. Maybe. That which does not kill us makes us stranger. Trevor Goodchild. You still don't vote, Saresti said. We would not be releasing the prisoners. Too risky. Out here in the endless wastelands of the Oort, there was no room for live and let live. Never mind what the other has done or what it hasn't. Think of what it could do if it were just a little stronger. Think of what it might have done if we'd arrived as late as we were supposed to. You look at Rorschach and perhaps you see an embryo or a developing child, alien beyond comprehension perhaps, but not guilty, not by default. But what if those are the wrong eyes? What if you should be seeing an omnipotent murdering god, a planet killer, not yet finished, vulnerable only now and for a little longer? There was no vampire opacity to that logic, no multidimensional black boxes for humans to shrug at and throw up their hands. There was no excuse for the failure to find fault with Saresti's reasoning, beyond the fact that his reasoning was without fault. That made it worse. The others, I knew, would rather have had to take something on faith. But Saresti had an alternative to capture release, one he evidently considered much safer. It took an act of faith to accept that reasoning, at least. By any sane measure, it verged on suicide. Now Theseus gave birth by caesarean. These progeny were far too massive to fit through the canal at the end of the spine. The ship shat them as if constipated directly into the hold. Great monstrous things, bristling with muzzles and antennae. Each stood 3 or 4 times my height, a pair of massive rust-colored cubes, every surface infested with topography. Armor plating would hide most of it prior to deployment, of course. Ribbons of piping and conduit, ammunition reservoirs and shark-toothed rows of radiator fins, all to disappear beneath smooth, reflective shielding. Only a few island landmarks would rise above that surface, comm ports, thrust nozzles, targeting arrays, and the gun ports, of course. These things spat fire and brimstone from a half dozen mouths apiece. But for the time being, they were just giant mechanical fetuses, half extruded, their planes and angles a high contrast jigsaw of light and shadow in the harsh white glow of the hold's flood lamps. I turned from the port. That's got to take our substrate stockpiles down a bit. Shielding the carapace was worse. Bates monitored construction through a dedicated flat screen built right into the fab bulkhead. Practicing, perhaps. We'd be losing our inlays as soon as the orbit changed. We're tapping out, though. Might have to grab one of the local rocks before long. Huh. I looked back into the hold. You think they're necessary? Doesn't matter what I think. You're a bright guy, Siri. Why can't you figure that out? It matters to me. That means it matters to Earth. Which might mean something if Earth was calling the shots. Some subtext was legible no matter how deep in the system you were. I tacked to port. How about Saresti and the captain, then? Any thoughts? You're usually a bit more subtle. That much was true. It's just, you know, Susan was the one that caught Stretch and Clench tapping back and forth, right? Bates winced at the names. So? Well, some might think it odd that Theseus wouldn't have seen it first, since quantum computers are supposed to be so proficient at pattern matching. Saresti took the quantum modules offline. The onboard's been running in classical mode since before we even made orbit. Why? Noisy environment. Too much risk of decoherence. Quantum computers are finicky things. Surely the onboard's shielded. Theseus is shielded. Bates nodded. As much as feasible, but perfect shielding is perfect blindness, and this is not the kind of neighborhood where you want to keep your eyes closed. Actually, it was, but I took her point. I took her other point, too, the one she didn't speak aloud. And you missed it. Something sitting right there in consensus for anyone to see, top-of-the-line synthesist like you. Saresti knows what he's doing, I guess, I admitted, endlessly aware that he might be listening. He hasn't been wrong yet, as far as we know. As far as we can know, Bates said. If you could second-guess a vampire, you wouldn't need a vampire, I remembered aloud. She smiled faintly. Isaac was a good man. You can't always believe the PR, though. You don't buy it, I asked, but she was already thinking she'd said too much. I threw out a hook baited with just the right mix of skepticism and deference. Saresti did know where those scramblers would be. Nailed it almost a meter out of that whole maze. I suppose that might have taken some kind of superhuman logic, she admitted, thinking I was so fucking dumb she couldn't believe it. What? I said. Bates shrugged. Or maybe he just realized that since Rorschach was growing its own crew, we'd run into more every time we went in, no matter where we landed. Consensus beeped into my silence. Orbital maneuvers starting in 5, Saresti announced. Inlays and wireless prosthetics offline in 90. That's all. Bates shut down the display. I'm going to ride this out in the bridge. Illusion of control and all that. You? My tent, I think. She nodded and braced to jump and hesitated. By the way, she told me. Yes. Sorry? You asked if I thought the emplacements were necessary. Right now I think we need all the protection we can get. So you think that Rorschach might be, hey, it already killed me once. She wasn't talking about radiation. I nodded carefully. That must have been like nothing at all. You couldn't possibly imagine. Bates took a breath and let it out. Maybe you don't have to, she added, and sailed away up the spine. Cunningham and the gang in Biomed, 30 degrees of arc between them, each poked their captives in their own way. Susan James stabbed indifferently at a keypad painted across her desktop. Windows to either side looked in on Stretch and Clench. Cookie-cutter shapes scrolled across the desk as James typed. Circles, triskelions, a quartet of parallel lines. Some of them pulsed like abstract little hearts. In his distant pen, Stretch reached out one fraying tentacle and tapped something in turn. Any progress? She sighed and shook her head. I've given up trying to understand their language. I'm settling for a pigeon. She tapped an icon. Clench vanished from his window. A hieroglyphic flowchart sprang up in his place. Half the symbols wriggled or pulsed, endlessly repetitive, a riot of dancing doodles. Others just sat there. Iconic base, James waved vaguely at the display. Subject verb phrases rendered as animated versions of noun icons. They're radially symmetrical, so I array modifiers in a circular pattern around the central subject. Maybe that comes naturally to them. A new circle of glyphs appeared beneath James's. Stretch's reply, presumably. But something in the system didn't like what it saw. Icons flared in a separate window. A luminous counter flashed 500 watts. And held steady. On the screen, Stretch writhed. It reached out with squirming backbone arms and stabbed repeatedly at its touchpad. James looked away. New glyphs appeared. 500 watts retreated to 0. Stretch returned to its holding pattern, the spikes and jags of its telemetry smoothed. James let out her breath. "What happened?" I asked. "Wrong answer." She tapped into Stretch's feed, showed me the display that had tripped it up. A pyramid, a star, simplified representations of a scrambler and of Rorschach rotated on the board. It was stupid. It was just a warm-up exercise, really. I asked it to name the objects in the window. She laughed softly and without humor. "That's the thing about functional languages, you know. If you can't point at it, you can't talk about it." "And what did it say?" She pointed at Stretch's first spiral. "Polyhedron star Rorschach are present." "It missed the scrambler." "Got it right the second time. Still, stupid mistake for something that can think rings around a vampire, isn't it?" Susan swallowed. "I guess even scramblers slip up when they're dying." I didn't know what to say. Behind me, barely audible, Cunningham muttered some two-stroke mantra to himself in an endless loop. "Yuka says," Susan stopped, began again. "You know that blind sight we get sometimes in Rorschach?" I nodded and wondered what Yuka had said. "Apparently the same thing can happen to the other senses, too," she told me. "You can have blind touch and blind smell and blind hearing." "That would be deafness." She shook her head. "But it isn't really, is it? Any more than blind sight is really blindness. Something in your head is still taking it all in. Something in the brain is still seeing and hearing, even if you're not aware of it. Unless someone forces you to guess or there's some threat. You just get a really strong feeling that you should move out of the way, and 5 seconds later a bus drives over the spot you were standing. You knew it was coming, somehow. You just don't know how you knew." "It's wild," I agreed. "These scramblers, they know the answers, Siri. They're intelligent, we know they are. But it's almost as though they don't know they know unless you hurt them. As if they've got blind sight spread over every sense." I tried to imagine it. Life without sensation, without any active awareness of one's environment. I tried to imagine existing like that without going mad. "Do you think that's possible?" "I don't know. It's just a metaphor, I guess." She didn't believe that. Or she didn't know. Or she didn't want me to know. I should have been able to tell. She should have been clear. "At first, I just thought they were resisting," she said. "But why would they?" She turned bright, begging eyes on me, pleading for an answer. I didn't have one. I didn't have a clue. I turned away from Susan James, only to find myself facing Robert Cunningham. Cunningham, the mutterer, fingers tapping against tabletop interfaces, inner eyes blinded. Vision limited now to the pictures consensus sketched in airspace or threw against flat surfaces for everyone to see. His face remained as empty of feeling as it had ever been. The rest of his body twitched like a bug in a spider web. He might as well have been. We all might. Rorschach loomed barely 9 kilometers away now, so near it might have eclipsed Ben itself if I'd been brave enough to look outside. We had closed to this insane proximity and parked. Out there, Rorschach grew like a live thing. In there, live things grew, budded like jellyfish from some demonic mechanical substrate. Those lethal vacant corridors we'd crept along, frightened of the shadows planted in our heads. They were probably filling with scramblers right now. All those hundreds of kilometers of twisted tunnels and passages and chambers, filling with an army. This was Saresti's safer alternative. This was the path we'd followed because it would have been too dangerous to release the prisoners. We were so deep inside the bow shock that we'd had to shut down our internal augments. While Rorschach's magnetosphere was orders of magnitude weaker here than within the structure itself, who knew if the alien might find us too tempting a target or too great a threat at this range? Who knew when it might choose to plunge some invisible spike through Theseus's heart? Any pulse that could penetrate the ship's shielding would doubtless fry Theseus's nervous system, as well as the wiring in our heads. I suppose that five people in a dead ship would have a marginally greater chance of survival if their brains weren't sparking in the bargain, but I doubted that such a difference would make much difference. Saristi had obviously figured the odds differently. He'd even shut down the anti-Euclidean pump in his own head, resorted to manual injections to keep himself from short-circuiting. Stretch and Clench were even closer to Rorschach than we were. Cunningham's lab had been kicked free of the ship. It floated now just a few kilometers from the artifact's outermost spires, deep within the folds of its magnetic field. If the scramblers needed radioactive magnetite to function, this was the most they were going to get, a taste of the fields, but not of freedom. The lab shielding was being dynamically fine-tuned to balance medical necessity against tactical risk, as best the data allowed. The structure floated in the watchful crosshairs of our newborn gun emplacements, strategically positioned to either side. Those emplacements could destroy the HAB in an instant. They could probably destroy anything approaching it as well. They couldn't destroy Rorschach, of course. Maybe nothing could. Covert to invulnerable. As far as we knew, that hadn't happened yet. Presumably Theseus could still do something about the artifact accreting off our bow, assuming we could decide which thing to do. Saristi wasn't talking. In fact, I couldn't remember the last time any of us had even seen the vampire in the flesh. For several shifts now, he had confined himself to his tent, speaking only through consensus. Everyone was on edge, and the transient had gone quiet. Cunningham muttered to himself, stabbed at unfamiliar controls with unpracticed fingers, cursed his own clumsiness. Stimulus and response flowed through lasers across 6 kilometers of ionized vacuum. The ever-present nicotine stick hung from one corner of his mouth for want of a free hand. Every now and then, flecks of ash broke free and drifted obliquely toward the ventilators. He spoke before I could. "It's all in consensus." When I didn't leave, he relented but wouldn't look at me. Magnetite flecks lined up as soon as they got past the wavefront, more or less. Membranes started to fix themselves. They're not failing as fast. But it's Rorschach's internal environment that will be optimized for scrambler metabolism. Out here, I think the most we can do is slow the rate of dying. "That's something, at least," Cunningham grunted. "Some of the pieces are coming together. Others, their nerves are frayed for no good reason. Literally, signal leakage along the cables." "Because of their deterioration, I guessed?" "And I can't get the Arrhenius equation to balance. There's all this non-linearity at low temperatures. That pre-exponential value's completely fucked up. It's almost as though temperature doesn't matter and... shit." Some critical value had exceeded a confidence limit on one of his displays. He glanced up the drum, raised his voice. "Need another biopsy, Susan. Anywhere central." "What? Oh, just a second." She shook her head and tapped off a brief spiral of icons, as listless as the captive she commanded. On one of Cunningham's windows, Stretch viewed her input with its marvelous sighted skin. It floated unresponsive for a moment. Then it folded back the arms facing one wall, opening a clear path for Cunningham's teleops. He called two of them from their burrows like prehensile serpents. The first wielded a clinical core sampler, the second wielded the threat of violence in case of foolish resistance. It was hardly necessary. Blindsided or not, scramblers were fast learners. Stretch exposed its belly like a victim resigned to imminent rape. Cunningham fumbled. The teleops bumped together, briefly entangled. He cursed and tried again, every move shouting frustration. His extended phenotype had been amputated. Once the very ghost in the machine, now he was just another guy punching buttons, and suddenly something clicked. Cunningham's facade swirled to translucency before my eyes. Suddenly, I could almost imagine him. He got it right the second time. The tip of his machine shot out like a striking snake and darted back again, almost too fast to see. Waves of color flushed from Stretch's injury like ripples chased across still water by a falling stone. Cunningham must have thought he saw something in my face. "It helps if you try not to think of them as people," he said. And for the very first time, I could read the subtext, as clear and sharp as broken glass. "Of course, you don't think of anyone that way." Cunningham didn't like to be played. No one does, but most people don't think that's what I'm doing. They don't know how much their bodies betray them when they close their mouths. When they speak aloud, it's because they want to confide. When they don't, they think they're keeping their opinion to themselves. I watch them so closely, customize each word so that no system ever feels used, and yet for some reason that didn't work with Robert Cunningham. I think I was modeling the wrong system. Imagine you are a synthesist. You deal in the behavior of systems at their surfaces, infer the machinery beneath from its reflections above. That is the secret of your success. You understand the system by understanding the boundaries that contain it. Now imagine you encounter someone who has ripped a hole in those boundaries and bled beyond them. Robert Cunningham's flesh could not contain him. His duties pulled him beyond the meat sack. Here in the Oort, his topology rambled all over the ship. That was true of all of us to some extent. Bates and her drones, Saresti and his limbic link. Even the consensus inlays in our heads diffused us a bit, spread us just slightly beyond the confines of our own bodies. But Bates only ran her drones. She never inhabited them. The gang of four may have run multiple systems on a single motherboard, but each had its own distinct topology, and they only surfaced one at a time. And Saresti, well, Saresti was a whole different story, as it turned out. Cunningham didn't just operate his remotes, he escaped into them, wore them like a secret identity to hide the feeble human baseline within. He had sacrificed half of his neocortex for the chance to see X-rays and taste the shapes hiding in cell membranes. He had butchered one body to become a fleeting tenant of many. Pieces of him hid in the sensors and manipulators that line the scrambler's cages. I might have gleaned vital clues from every piece of equipment in the subdrum if I'd ever thought to look. Cunningham was a topological jigsaw like everyone else, but half his pieces were hidden in machinery. My model was incomplete. I don't think he ever aspired to such a state. Looking back, I see radiant self-loathing on every remembered surface. But there, in the waning years of the 21st century, the only alternative he could see was the life of a parasite. Cunningham merely chose the lesser evil. Now, even that was denied him. Saresti's orders had severed him from his own sensorium. He no longer felt the data in his gut. He had to interpret it step by laborious step through screens and graphs that reduced perception to flat, empty shorthand. Here was a system traumatized by multiple amputations. Here was a system with its eyes and ears and tongue cut out, forced to stumble and feel its way around things it had once inhabited right down in the bone. Suddenly there was nowhere else to hide, and all those far-flung pieces of Robert Cunningham tumbled back into his flesh, where I could see them at last. It had been my mistake all along. I'd been so focused on modeling other systems that I'd forgotten about the one doing the modeling. Bad eyes are only one bane of clear vision. Bad assumptions can be just as blinding. And it wasn't enough to imagine I was Robert Cunningham. I had to imagine I was Ciri Keaton as well. Of course, that only raises another question. If my guess about Cunningham was right, Why did my tricks work on Isaac Spindle? He was every bit as discontinuous as his replacement. I didn't think about it much at the time. Spindle was gone, but the thing that had killed him was still there, hanging right off the bow, a vast swelling enigma that might choose to squash us at any instant. I was more than a little preoccupied. Now, though, far too late to do anything about it. I think I might know the answer. Maybe my tricks didn't work on Isaac, either. Not really. Maybe he saw through my manipulations as easily as Cunningham did. But maybe he just didn't care. Maybe I could read him because he let me. Which would mean, I can't find another explanation that fits, that he just liked me, regardless. I think that might have made him a friend. If I can but make the words awake the feeling. Ian Anderson, Stand Up. Night shift. Not a creature was stirring. Not in Theseus, anyway. The gang hid in their tent. The transient lurked, weightless and silent, below the surface. Bates was in the bridge. She more or less lived up there now, vigilant and conscientious, nested in camera angles and tactical overlays. There was nowhere she could turn without seeing some aspect of the cipher off our starboard bow. She did what good she could, for the good it would do. The drum turned quietly, lights dimmed in deference to a dial cycle that 100 years of tweaks and retrofits hadn't been able to weed from the genes. I sat alone in the galley, squinting from the inside of a system whose outlines grew increasingly hazy, trying to compile my latest, how had Isaac put it, postcard to posterity. Cunningham worked upside down on the other side of the world. Except Cunningham wasn't working. He hadn't even moved for at least 4 minutes. I'd assumed he was reciting the Kaddish for Spindle. Consensus said he'd be doing it twice daily for the next year, if we lived that long. But now, leaning to see around the spinal bundles in the core, I could read his surfaces as clearly as if I'd been sitting beside him. He wasn't bored, or distracted, or even deep in thought. Robert Cunningham was petrified. I stood and paced the drum. Ceiling turned into wall, wall into floor. But I was close enough to hear his incessant soft muttering, a single indistinct syllable repeated over and over. Then I was close enough to hear what he was saying. Fuck, 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 fuck. And still Cunningham didn't move, although I'd made no attempt to mask my approach. Finally, when I was almost at his shoulder, he fell silent. You're blind, he said without turning. Did you know that? I didn't. You, me, everyone. He interlocked his fingers and clenched as if in prayer, hard enough to whiten the knuckles. Only then did I notice. No cigarette. Vision's mostly a lie anyway, he continued. We don't really see anything except a few high-res degrees where the eye focuses. Everything is just peripheral blur, just light and motion. Motion draws the focus, and your eyes jiggle all the time. Did you know that, Keaton? Saccades, they're called. Blurs the image. The movement's way too fast for the brain to integrate, so your eye just shuts down between pauses. It only grabs these isolated freeze frames, but your brain edits out the blanks and stitches an illusion of continuity into your head. He turned to face me. And you know what's really amazing? If something only moves during the gaps, your brain just ignores it. It's invisible. I glanced at his workspace. The usual split screen glowed to one side, real-time images of the scramblers and their pens, but histology, 10,000 times larger than life, took center stage. The paradoxical neural architecture of stretch and clench glistened on the main window, flensed and labeled and overlaid by circuit diagrams a dozen layers thick. A dense annotated forest of alien trunks and brambles. It looked a little like Rorschach itself. I couldn't parse any of it. Are you listening, Keaton? Do you know what I'm saying? You figured out why I couldn't. You're saying these things can somehow tell when our eyes are offline, and I didn't finish. It just didn't seem possible. Cunningham shook his head. Something that sounded disturbingly like a giggle escaped his mouth. I'm saying these things can see your nerves firing from across the room and integrate that into a Crypsis strategy, and then send motor commands to act on that strategy, and then send other commands to stop the motion before your eyes come back online. All in the time it would take a mammalian nerve impulse to make it halfway from your shoulder to your elbow. These things are fast, Keaton. Way faster than we could have guessed even from that high-speed whisper line they were using. They're bloody superconductors. It took a conscious effort to keep from frowning. Is that even possible? Every nerve impulse generates an electromagnetic field. That makes it detectable. But Rorschach's EM fields are so... I mean, reading the firing of a single optic nerve through all that interference, it's not interference. The fields are part of them, remember? That's probably how they do it. So they couldn't do that here. You're not listening. The trap you set wouldn't have caught anything like that, not unless it wanted to be caught. We didn't grab specimens at all. We grabbed spies. Stretch and Clench floated in split screen before us, arms swaying like undulating backbones. Cryptic patterns played slowly across their cuticles. Supposing it's just instinct, I suggested. Flounders hide against their background pretty well, but they don't think about it.
Where are they going to get that instinct from,
Keaton? How's it going to evolve? Saccades are an accidental glitch in mammalian vision. Where would scramblers have encountered them before now? Cunningham shook his head. That thing Amanda's robot fried. It developed that strategy on its own, on the spot. It improvised. The word intelligent barely encompassed that kind of improvisation. But there was something else in Cunningham's face, some deeper distress nested inside what he'd already told me. What? I asked. It was stupid, he said. The things these creatures can do, it was just dumb. How do you mean? Well, it didn't work, did it?
Couldn't keep it up
in front of more than one or two of us. Because people's eyes don't flicker in sync, I realized. Too many witnesses stripped it of cover. Many other things it could have done, Cunningham was saying. They could have induced Antons or an agnosia. Then we could have tripped over a whole herd of scramblers and it wouldn't even register in our conscious minds. Agnosias happen by accident, for God's sake. If you got the senses and reflexes to hide between someone's saccades, why stop there? Why not do something that really works? Why do you think? I asked, reflexively non-directive. I think that first one was... You know it was a juvenile, right? Maybe it was just inexperienced. Maybe it was stupid, and it made a bad decision. I think we're dealing with a species so far beyond us that even their retarded children can rewire our brains on the fly... And I can't tell you how fucking scared that should make you. I could see it in his topology. I could hear it in his voice. His nerveless face remained as calm as a corpse. We should just kill them now, he said. Well, if they're spies, they can't have learned much. They've been in those cages the whole time, except for the way up. They'd been right next to us on the whole trip back. These things live and breathe EM, even stunted, even isolated. Who knows how much of our tech they could have just read through the walls. You gotta tell Saresti, I said. Oh, Saresti knows. Why do you think he wouldn't let them go? He never said anything about he'd be crazy to fill us in. He keeps sending you down there, remember? Do you think for a second he'd tell you what he knows and then set you loose in a labyrinth full of mind-reading minotaurs? He knows, and he's already got it factored 1,000 ways to Sunday. Cunningham's eyes were bright manic points blazing in an expressionless mask. He raised them to the center of the drum and didn't raise his voice a decibel. Isn't that right, Yuka? I checked consensus for active channels. I don't think he's listening, Robert. Cunningham's mouth moved in something that would have been a pitying smile if the rest of his face had been able to join in. He doesn't have to listen, Keaton. He doesn't have to spy on us. He just knows. Ventilators, breathing, the almost subliminal hum of bearings in motion. Then Saristi's disembodied voice rang forth through the drum.
Everyone to commons. Robert wants to share.
Cunningham sat to my right, his plastic face lit from beneath by the conference table. He stared down into that light, rocking slightly. His lips went through the ongoing motions of some inaudible incantation. The gang sat across from us. To my left, Bates kept one eye on the proceedings and another on intelligence from the front lines. Saristi was with us only in spirit. His place at the head of the table remained empty.
Tell them, he said. We have to get out of from the beginning.
Cunningham swallowed and started again. Those frayed motor nerves I couldn't figure out. Those pointless cross connections. They're logic gates. Scramblers time share. Their sensory and motor plexi double as associative neurons during idle time, so every part of the system can be used for cognition when it isn't otherwise engaged. Nothing like it ever evolved on Earth. It means they can do a great deal of processing without a lot of dedicated associative mass, even for an individual. So peripheral nerves can think? Bates frowned. Can they remember?
Certainly. At least, I don't see why not.
Cunningham pulled a cigarette from his pocket. So when they tore that scrambler apart,
not civil war, data dump. Passing information about us, most likely.
Pretty radical way to carry on a conversation, Bates remarked.
It wouldn't be their first choice. I think each scrambler acts as a node in a distributed network, when they're in Rorschach, at least. But those fields would be configured down to the angstrom, and when we go in with our tech and our shielding
and blowing holes in their conductors,
we bollocks up the network, jam the local signal, so they resort to a sneaker net.
He had not lit his cigarette. He rolled the filtered end between thumb and forefinger. His tongue flickered between his lips like a worm behind a mask. Hidden in his tent, Saristi took up the slack.
Scramblers also use Rorschach's EM for metabolic processes. Some pathways achieve proton transfer via heavy atom tunneling. Perhaps the ambient radiation acts as a catalyst.
Tunneling? Susan said. As in quantum? Cunningham nodded.
Which also explains your shielding problems, partly at least.
But is that even possible? I mean, I thought those kind of effects only showed up under cryonic...
Forget this, Cunningham blurted. We can debate the biochemistry later, if we're still alive.
What do we debate instead, Robert?
Saristi said smoothly.
For starters, the dumbest of these things can look into your head and see what parts of your visual cortex are lighting up. And if there's a difference between that and mind reading, it's not much of one.
As long as we stay out of Rorschach.
That ship has sailed. You people have already been there. Repeatedly. Who knows what you already did down there for no better reason than because Rorschach made you.
Wait a second, Bates objected. None of us were puppets down there. We hallucinated and we went blind and crazy even, but we were never possessed.
Cunningham looked at her and snorted. You think you'd be able to fight the strings? You think you'd even feel them? I could apply a transcranial magnet to your head right now, and you'd raise your middle finger or wiggle your toes or kick Siri here in the sack, and then swear on your sainted mother's grave that you only did it because you wanted to. You'd dance like a puppet and all the time swear you were doing it of your own free will, and that's just me. That's just some borderline OCD with a couple of magnets and an MRI helmet.
He waved at the vast, unknowable void beyond the bulkhead. Shreds of mangled cigarette floated sideways in front of him. Do you want to guess what that can do? For all we know, we've already given them Theseus's technical specs, warned them about the Icarus Array, and then just decided, of our own free will, to forget it all.
We can cause those effects, Sarasti said coolly. As you say, strokes cause them, tumors, random accidents.
Random? Those were experiments, people. That was vivisection. They let you in so they could take you apart and see what made you tick, and you never even knew it.
So what?
The vampire snapped invisibly. Something cold and hungry had edged into his voice. Human topology shivered around the table. Skittish.
There's a blind spot in the center of your visual field, Sarasti pointed out. You can't see it. You can't see the saccades in your visual time stream. Just two of the tricks you know about. Many others.
Cunningham was nodding.
That's my whole point. Rorschach could be not talking about case studies. Brains are survival engines, not truth detectors. If self-deception promotes fitness, the brain lies, stops noticing irrelevant things. Truth never matters, only fitness. By now, you don't experience the world as it exists at all. You experience a simulation built from assumptions, shortcuts, lies. Whole species is agnosiac by default. Rorschach does nothing to you that you don't already do to yourselves.
Nobody spoke. It was several silent seconds before I realized what had happened. Yuka Sarasti had just given us a pep talk. He could have shut down Cunningham's tirade. He could have probably shut down a full-scale mutiny by just sailing into our midst and baring his teeth by looking at us. But he wasn't trying to frighten us into submission. We were already nervous enough, and he wasn't trying to educate us either. Fight fear with fact. The more facts any sane person gathered about Rorschach, the more fearful they'd become. Sarasti was only trying to keep us functional, lost in space on the edge of our lives, facing down this monstrous enigma that might destroy us at any instant for any reason. Sarasti was trying to calm us down. Good meat. Nice meat. He was trying to keep us from falling apart. There, there. Sarasti was practicing psychology. I looked around the table. Bates and Cunningham and the gang sat still and bloodless. Sarasti sucked at it.
We have to get out of here, Cunningham said. These things are way beyond us.
We've shown more aggression than they have, James said, but there was no confidence in her voice.
Rorschach plays those rocks like marbles. We're sitting in the middle of a shooting gallery. Anytime it feels like it's still growing, it's not finished. That's supposed to reassure me?
All I'm saying is we don't know, James said. We could have years yet, centuries.
We have 15 days, Sarasti announced.
Oh, shit, someone said. Cunningham, probably. Maybe Sasha. For some reason, everyone was looking at me. 15 days. Who knows what had gone into that number?
None of us asked aloud. Maybe Saresti, in another fit of inept psychology, had made it up on the spur of the moment. Or maybe he'd derived it before we'd even reached orbit, held it back against the possibility, only now expired, that he might yet send us back into the labyrinth. I'd been half blind for half the mission. I didn't know. But one way or another, we had our graduation day. The coffins lay against the rear bulkhead of the crypt, on what would be the floor during those moments when up and down held any meaning. We'd slept for years on the way out. We'd had no awareness of time's passage. Undead metabolism is far too sluggish even to support dreams. But somehow the body knew when it needed a change. Not one of us had chosen to sleep in our pods once we'd arrived. The only times we'd done so had been on pain of death. But the gang had taken to coming here ever since Spindle had died. His body rested in the pod next to mine. I coasted into the compartment and turned left without thinking. 5 coffins, 4 open and emptied, 1 sealed. The mirrored bulkhead opposite doubled their number and the depth of the compartment. But the gang wasn't there. I turned right. The body of Susan James floated back to back with her own reflection, staring at an inverse tableau. 3 sealed sarcophagi, 1 open. The ebony plaque set into the retracted lid was dark. The others shone with identical sparse mosaics of blue and green stars. None of them had changed. There were no scrolling ECGs, no luminous peak and valley tracings marked cardio or CNS. We could wait here for hours, days, and none of those diodes would so much as twinkle. When you're undead, the emphasis is on the second syllable. The gang's topology had said Michelle when I'd first arrived, but it was Susan who spoke now without turning. I never met her. I followed her gaze to the name tag on one of the sealed pods. Takamatsu, the other linguist, the other multiple. I met everyone else, Susan continued, trained with them, but I never met my own replacement. They discouraged it. What would have been the point? If you want to, I began. She shook her head. Thanks, anyway. Or any of the others. I can only imagine what Michelle... Susan smiled, but there was something cold about it. Michelle doesn't really want to talk to you right now, Siri. Ah. I hesitated for a moment to give anyone else a chance to speak up. When nobody did, I pushed myself back toward the hatch. Well, if any of you change, no, none of us, ever. Cruncher. You lie, he continued. I see it. We all do. I blinked. Lie? You don't talk. You listen. You don't care about Michelle. Don't care about anyone. You just want what we know for your reports. That's not entirely true, Cruncher. I do care. I know Michelle must... You don't know shit. Go away. I'm sorry I upset you. I rolled on my axis and braced against the mirror. You can't know, Mish, he growled as I pushed off. You never lost anyone. You never had anyone. You leave her alone. He was wrong on both counts. At least Spindle had died knowing that Michelle cared for him. Chelsea died thinking I just didn't give a shit. It had been 2 years or more, and while we still interfaced occasionally, we hadn't met in the flesh since the day she'd left. She came at me from right out of the Oort, sent an urgent voice message to my inlays, Cygnus, please call now, it's important. It was the first time since I'd known her that she'd ever blanked the optics. I knew it was important. I knew it was bad, even without picture. I knew because there was no picture, and I could tell it was worse than bad from the harmonics in her voice. I could tell it was lethal. I found out afterward that she'd gotten caught in the crossfire. The realists had sewn a fibrodysplasia variant outside the Boston catacombs. An easy tweak, a single-point retroviral, whose result served both as an act of terrorism and an ironic commentary on the frozen paralysis of heaven's occupants. It rewrote a regulatory gene controlling ossification on chromosome 4
and rigged a metabolic bypass at 3 loci on 17.
Chelsea started growing a new skeleton. Her joints were calcifying within 15 hours of exposure, her ligaments and tendons within 20. By then they were starving her at the cellular level, trying to slow the bug by depriving it of metabolites, but they could only buy time and not much of it. 23 hours in, her striated muscles were turning to stone. I didn't find this out immediately, because I didn't call her back. I didn't need to know the details. I could tell from her voice that she was dying. Obviously, she wanted to say goodbye. I couldn't talk to her until I knew how to do that. I spent hours scouring the noosphere looking for precedents. There's no shortage of ways to die. I found millions of case records dealing with the etiquette. Last words, last vows, instruction manuals for the soon-to-bereaved.
Palliative neurofarm.
Extended and expository death scenes in popular fiction. I went through it all, assigned a dozen frontline filters to separate heat from light. By the time she called again, the news was out. Acute golem outbreak lancing like a white-hot needle through the heart of Boston. Containment measures holding. Heaven secure. Modest casualties expected. Names of victims withheld pending notification of kin. I still didn't know the principles, the rules. All I had were examples, last wills and testaments, the negotiation of jumpers with their would-be rescuers, diaries recovered from imploded submarines or lunar crash sites, recorded memoirs and deathbed confessions rattling into flatline, black box transcripts of doomed spaceships and falling beanstalks ending in fire and static. All of it relevant, none of it useful, none of it her. She called again, and still the optics were blank, and still I didn't answer. But the last time she called, she didn't spare me the view. They'd made her as comfortable as possible. The gel pad conformed to every twisted limb, every erupting spur of bone. They would not have left her in any pain. Her neck had torqued down and to the side as it petrified, left her staring at the twisted claw that had once been her right hand. Her knuckles were the size of walnuts.
Plates and ribbons of ectopic bone distended the skin of her arms and shoulders,
buried her ribs in a fibrous mat of calcified flesh. Movement was its own worst enemy. Golem punished even the slightest twitch, provoked the growth of fresh bone along any joints and surfaces conspiring to motion. Each hinge and socket had its own non-renewable ration of flexibility, carved in stone. Every movement depleted the account. The body seized incrementally. By the time she let me look at her, Chelsea had almost exhausted her degrees of freedom. "Sig," she slurred. "Know you're there." Her jaw was locked half open. Her tongue must have stiffened with every word. She did not look at the camera. She could not look at the camera. "Guess I know why you're not answering. I'll try not to take it personally." 10,000 deathbed goodbyes arrayed around me, a million more within reach. What was I supposed to do? Pick one at random? Stitch them into some kind of composite? All those words had been for other people. Grafting them onto Chelsea would reduce them to cliches, to trite platitudes, to insults. "Want to say, don't feel bad. I know you're just, it's not your fault, I guess. You'd pick up if you could." "And say what? What do you say to someone who's dying and fast forward before your eyes?" "Just keep trying to connect, you know.
Can't help self.
Although the essentials of this farewell are accurate, details from several deaths have been combined for dramatic purposes.
Please, just talk to me, Sig. More than anything, I wanted to. Siri,
I'd spent all this time trying to figure out how.
Forget it,
she said, and disconnected. I whispered something into the dead air. I don't even remember what. I really wanted to talk to her. I just couldn't find an algorithm that fit.
This ends Disc 8.